This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. Employment can be a touchy subject, especially when you're between jobs and trying to convince a future employer that the gap between positions was not a choice. It's just been tough finding something that fits your qualifications. And if you're getting ready to graduate college, navigating the workforce can be tricky. With us today are three state officials who work in the areas of education and workforce development. We have Teresa Lubbers, Indiana's Commissioner for Higher Education, Fred Payne, Indiana's Commissioner for Workforce Development, and Katie Jenner is Secretary of Education for the Indiana Department of Education. Welcome, everyone. Thank you so much for being with us this afternoon. I want to start from the beginning, if we can, before we dive into numbers and trends. Teresa, when we hear that the state prepares students for the workforce, what does that mean and what do those efforts look like?
Well, it hopefully means that we're preparing people for a meaningful job, a good job now, but that we're also committed to making sure that as the economy changes, we're committed to making sure that those individuals have opportunities for lifelong learning as the economy changes. So, I mean, the good news is that through the governor's workforce cabinet, which was created in 2018, we're really aligning educators and employers and community leaders at both the state and regional level around those workforce needs. We have not always done a good job to prepare people for how much the economy is changing. If you look at the second half of the 20th century, collectively, we're all committed to making sure that doesn't happen this time.
Mm-hmm. And when you talk about preparation, is there sort of a concrete example of some kind of initiative that's been done?
Well, there are several ways to prepare. One, we're trying to make sure that more students are actually leaving high school, and Katie can certainly speak to this, with the kinds of skills and credentials they need. If they're going straight into the world of work, that they have a high-quality certificate or industry certification of some sort. If they're going on into higher education, if possible, that they've earned college credit while they're still in high school, reducing the amount of time or money that it takes for your college experience, making sure that they're academically prepared, that we find the right fit for students, aligning with what their aspirations and goals are and also the needs of the economy. And then, of course, and Fred will talk about this very compellingly as well, making sure that those people who have already been into the world of work, who do not have the opportunity to either keep their job or get a better job, that we bring them back for the kind of preparation that they need. This really requires, coordination between employers and educators. I mentioned just that under the Next Level Jobs program through the state, we have two programs in particular. One is the Workforce Ready Grant, which we can say to adults, if you come back and get a high value certificate, and we have about 150 of those, it will be tuition free. We can also say to students who are in high school that if you're a 21st century scholar, you can access higher education tuition free. And then we also have, and Fred can talk about this as well, the employer training grant, where the state is providing funding to employers to train their current and their new employees.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Continuing with the preparation of students, Katie, can you give us a little insight into, how Indiana schools have prepared students to get to college and to graduate high school?
Well, thank you, Miriam, for having us on today. And I think we'll start with, the early learning to grade 12 space is such a pivotal time for a student. It's a time where we must, in every single grade level, focus on the knowledge and skills, the knowledge and skill development, while also ensuring that we're providing students the opportunity to explore and engage with different potential career opportunities. Some students are in family or friend settings where they have a lot of exposure to different potential paths that their life could take. Many of our other students are not. And so it really is pivotal that in the early learning to grade 12 space, that we are just continuously exposing students and providing them opportunities. I'll also echo a bit of what Commissioner Lubbers was saying with regard to what we're seeing across our state. And this is really a growing movement, but what we're seeing across our state is an increased focus on work-based learning experiences, helping students to get in there and have that hands-on experience and also connect with people who are already in a certain profession. Also the increased opportunity when we blur the lines between K-12 and higher ed in workforce, that the increased opportunities for the high value industry certifications or post-secondary credentials, we're seeing that attainment strategy is actually really working in the K-12 space, and something that we can continue to just maximize in Indiana.
And I'm curious, Fred, how do these efforts in the education realm relate to workforce development, and how closely are you all able to work together?
Well, it helps quite a bit because, you know, some students end up leaving a high school who are ready to enter the workforce because they already have a high wage, high demand certification because of dual credit and or some apprenticeship or work-based learning programs. So you have some students who are ready to enter the workforce, and then you have those who are actually entering higher education, or you have those individuals who are really coming back to receive some type of certification because they want a different job. And we've worked well, I think, over the past few years with both higher ed as well as the K-12 space in putting together different types of work-based learning and apprenticeship programs. So, for example, back in 2018, through executive order, the governor started our Office of Work-Based Learning and Apprenticeship that's housed under the Department of Workforce Development. And the sole purpose of that office was to expand apprenticeship opportunities and work-based learning opportunities throughout the state. And when we expand those opportunities, we engage with both employers, with educators in the community. And when we have that type of partnership that's helping our students who are still in high school, in the high school space, and then even the adults who are already working but who are getting some additional type of certification, we think that they're well prepared. The students who are coming out of high school are well prepared to enter those jobs because they've had exposure to them. And the Office of Work-Based Learning and Apprenticeship, it looks at things from kind of a 360 standpoint. Anything from a job shadow all the way through a registered apprenticeship program. So there are a variety of entry points that an employer or an education institution can engage with on that. Some employers may not be ready to have a full-scale apprenticeship program, but they can utilize their time and get students some exposure with a job shadow, or they can have an internship, or they can have a work-based learning program. So those are some of the ways that we've actually tried to make sure that we're engaging with both Teresa as well as Katie over at in the K-12 space.
Miriam, this is Teresa. I would like your listeners to know that we are collectively committed to what we call the big goal in Indiana, and that is that 60% of Hoosiers would have a quality credential beyond high school. Some might ask why we have that number and why that's so important, and it is clearly aligned to the needs of today's economy and the changing economy as well. What we know is that those people who are most vulnerable to volatility in their job are those who don't have that kind of education. We also know that in the last downturn in the economy in 2008 and 2009, 99% of the new jobs that were created required some sort of education or training beyond high school. So we're making progress. We're at about 48.5% of that 60% goal right now. We know that there's no way to get there without doing a better job with first-generation, low-income minority students coming out of high school, and also getting more of our adults to return and get the credentials that they need as well. So it's really, again, collectively, we all have the same goal, but we're operationalizing that different through the different lenses in which we have our jobs every day.
Right, right. And so I think that brings up the question of access. And, you know, we know that education is important in obtaining better employment, but how are you able to address the need of access and ensuring that it's a level playing field and that, all students are able to take in these opportunities?
So I'll kick off that response. Equity and access is something we are going to be very, very focused on ahead, and something we see there's just great opportunity in this space. And some of it is, and I'll just bookend, for example, the K-12 space. It starts with access to quality early learning, right? And that's an opportunity. We have On My Way Pre-K and in Indiana, and how do we continue to expand upon the good work and opportunities in that early learning space? And then now I'll segue to that high school space and access to dual credit courses mm-hmm. and advanced placement courses. We're really looking at the data, to your point, do our students of color in Indiana have access? What about our students who are lower income? Do they have access? Students with disabilities, so on and so forth. Because we know that if they do have access to these dual credit advanced placement courses, that they could potentially, in the 13 years they're in K-12, they could potentially leave with a post-secondary credential of some kind. In fact, 1 in 5 high schools, we're seeing that across the state, earn a specific credential called the Indiana College Core. But that hits exactly to Commissioner Lover's point that she mentioned on the 60% goal that Indiana has so that we are ready to go as a state. Our workforce is ready. Our human capital is ready. The K-12 space plays a major role in that attainment strategy.
And I mm-hmm. think one additional piece of information that I like to insert in here when you talk about resources and barriers and access, one of the purposes for the Next Level Jobs program is to help remove a financial burden for students who are trying to receive a certification or even an associate's degree. So under that Next Level Jobs program, you have two programs, as Commissioner Lovers mentioned earlier, one with the Workforce Ready Grant. An individual who sees that they have a certification that they want to go and receive, then they can actually go and get that. It will be free of charge, and employers can provide that type of training as well.
Okay, well, we'll definitely pick back up on that. I'd like to learn a little bit more about this Next Level Jobs program. We'll be back with our guests after a quick break. We're talking to state officials about education and the workforce and what role the state can play in helping people find jobs. If you have questions or comments for the show, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. I'm Miriam Sobe. We'll be right back. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam. So before the break, we were talking about the Next Level Jobs program as we discuss the state of education and the workforce in Indiana. With us today are Teresa Lubbers, Indiana's Commissioner for Higher Education, Fred Payne, Indiana's Commissioner for Workforce Development, and Katie Jenner, Secretary of Education for the Indiana Department of Education. Now, Fred, before we left off on the break, you were telling us a little bit about this Next Level Jobs program, and I'd like to hear a little bit more on how this is aiming to provide some equity and access for communities in Indiana.
Sure. Again, one of the barriers that we know that individuals have to accessing education really is the financial barrier to actually pay for the education or the training. And the Workforce Ready Grant and the Employer Training Grant, there are two ways under the Next Level Jobs program that eliminates or significantly reduces that financial burden. So, for example, if an individual who wants to have a career change and let's say they want to go into computer coding and they see a program that teaches or does some training in computer coding, the student goes and signs up for that program. And under our Workforce Ready Grant program, we would pay for that training. Now, on the employer side of the house, employers train or retrain employees, new employees and incumbent employees in high wage, high demand areas, and they are reimbursed for that training. And that program was set up that provides up to $5,000 per employee to be reimbursed, up to $50,000 per employer. And what we've seen over the past few years since we've had those programs in place, we've had quite a few individuals who have receive certifications and who are actually in the process of receiving them through the Workforce Ready Grant side of the house. And employers are getting employees who are being upskilled because of the Workforce Ready Grant program.
One of the things that we did when we created these programs is we wanted to make sure that if we were encouraging people to invest their time and we were using state taxpayer dollars to pay for those, that there would, in fact, be a good job for someone after that. And what we know is we, on the Workforce Ready Grant, for example, we have over 42,000 Hoosiers who are currently enrolled and close to 22,000 who have completed that. The annual wage, median wage gain for those individuals who complete one of those certificates is $6,800. So we know that there is a job waiting for that individual, and it's a good job if they invest their time. We also know, as Fred has talked about, the employer training grant, that the annual wage gain for those who complete the training through their employer is $5,900. So we've been very intentional about this to say that if we're going to ask state taxpayers to provide an opportunity tuition-free, we need to make sure that the individuals actually will benefit from that and the state will as well. What we're convinced is that this will grow personal prosperity and that it will meet the needs of our employers who in many of these areas are looking for employees and they are desperate in need for some of these employees with these skills. And we also know that it will strengthen Indiana's economy, which is undergoing dramatic change right now from the kind of economy we had. You know, we're still the most manufacturing intensive state in the nation, but manufacturing jobs don't look like they used to. All you need to do is go into and look at one of these industries and see the kinds of skills they need. Look at the robotics. Think about the impact of automation and artificial intelligence on these jobs. And so we're working very hard to make sure that these programs are aligned to the needs of the economy. I also just have to mention that for those who do go straight into higher education, Indiana actually ranks first in the Midwest and fourth in the nation in need-based aid. We distribute more than $350 million a year to Hoosiers who are in need of financial aid in order to access higher education. And it's making a difference in terms of the accessibility of higher education to Hoosiers.
Well, when we talk about employment, we also kind of have to go into this realm of unemployment. And when we look at Indiana, as of January, the unemployment rate was about 4.2%, experts saying it's slightly lower than the national average. And so, Fred, I want to know, what does that mean for people who are looking for jobs? You know, it always seems like there's a disconnect between what we hear that employers are desperately trying to hire, and then there's job seekers who are saying, I can't find a job.
There, you can look at that in a variety of ways. One, that unemployment rate, that 4.2% is, that's a significant improvement down from the 16.9% that we had back in April. So that shows that employees individuals are finding jobs and they are transitioning back into work. Now, what that means for an individual who says, hey, I can't find a job, but I hear that there are a lot of job openings. There are a variety of reasons that could account for that. An individual may not be in the geographic location where there are a plethora of jobs that are open right now. On our page right now, when you look, you may see about 109,000 job openings throughout the state. And when we say job openings, we really mean job postings, because our system really pulls in and it looks at all of the jobs that are posted throughout the state and pulls them into one system and it tabulates them. And we have a website that that reposts those jobs. So individuals can go to our Next Level Jobs website, or they can go to dwd.in.gov website and look and see some of those jobs. If they find one of those jobs that they're interested in, but yet they may not have the skills for, that's where the Workforce Ready Grant can help them to bridge that gap between the skills that they don't have and the skills that they can have and maybe get that job.
Now, when we talk about jobs to fill in vacancies, one area that often comes up is the lack of teachers in Indiana. And Katie, what's being done with this teacher shortage?
Well, first of all, I so appreciate you, Miriam, for bringing up that topic. I mean, in order to best serve Indiana students and in our future human capital of our state, it is critical for our state, we must have a robust educator pipeline. We are the current data right now shows that we have a lot of room for improvement. In fact, a commission data report that we recently partnered with the Commission for Higher Education showed that only about one in six undergraduate education students actually entered the teaching profession in Indiana. And so we know, and we must build a better pipeline. And I think that includes several different things. And by the way, this list is not fully inclusive, but I'll give you a few. One is we must increase teacher compensation. The teacher compensation report that came out from the commission that the governor asked to put together showed clearly that we are behind in Indiana, and we must increase teacher compensation. The second is that we really must elevate the education profession. It's critical. We have to celebrate the purposeful difference-making work that is happening in our classrooms and why we need such talent in our classrooms, doing the work every day. It matters so much for our state. And then thirdly, we must attract more of our best and brightest to the profession, which includes candidates of color in leadership and in our classrooms. There are various strategies that we're considering. Many of the strategies that, when we think about the educator pipeline, we've been using the same strategies year after year after year for a couple of decades now. So the Department of Education is partnering close with the Commission for Higher Education to really think about what does our data show and what strategies don't just correlate, but will be the causal impact of really propelling our educator pipeline. I'll give you one example for the sake of time, Miriam, although we could talk about this all day long for sure. But one example that we're really starting to get some movement on in our state with some school corporations and higher education institutions partnering is the Grow Your Own opportunity. We know that if we can capture a student's attention early in the education field, they're more likely to stay and actually enter our classrooms someday. And the Grow Your Own opportunity, I'll give you one such example. A student can earn that first year of their educator, the teaching college work while they're in high school through the dual credit that we've already talked about or the advanced placement courses, and then transfer into the remaining of their bachelor's degree to complete that to complete that experience. The other piece that I'll add in there, and we've talked about work-based learning, I think both commissioners have, but also the opportunity for the experiential learning while they're in high school to really, whether it's through a cadet teaching program and they're volunteering or serving in an elementary classroom, to really get the experience and the impact you can make. But that's something, that's one strategy of several that we will really be pushing the gas on in the coming months to impact this really critical work for our state.
Now, I'm going to go into the topic that I think, you know, honestly, when people think about jobs, they're looking for how much money they're going to be able to make. And when it comes to teachers, there's a push for better pay. What's being done in that realm? And, you know, what needs to happen for that to be at a place where everyone feels comfortable?
Well, the governor is actively involved in this conversation. Sometimes I think he goes to bed and wakes up thinking about it. I mean, it really deeply matters to him. It really deeply matters to us and our team. I spoke with a group of superintendents actually yesterday, and this conversation came up. And we know that it's going to be a combination of local districts working on this issue, because of course the state drives money into the local districts, and then they negotiate it for their teachers. And it's also going to involve the state determining the steps forward. And we were actively in conversations about how that may look.
And are you looking at all to any other states and that may have been able to successfully increase teacher pay without making it such a heavy thing on taxpayers.
Yeah, I think we always must look at our best examples throughout the country. I think when we look throughout our country, most state chiefs serving in the same role that I am in their states are also trying to address this in their states as well, right? I don't know that anyone yet has the golden egg of how to do this, but we all know, and we know in Indiana, it's critically important, and we must stay focused on that mission of elevating and increasing teacher pay.
Now, these days, it might seem easier to find a job because of the ability to apply online. So we're going to talk a little bit about online applications and access and all of that. So interviews can be done now from home via video call due to the pandemic. But the question of access will come up as we talk about this, the new and easy ways some of us are able to log on and get things done. And I'm curious about what efforts are being made to reach those who don't have access. Teresa, is there anything being done to reach people who may not have digital literacy skills or don't even have the internet?
Well, obviously, COVID has made this very clear that this didn't proportionally impact people across the state. At the state level, the focus on broadband between the executive and the legislative branch has been very strong, with an understanding that, you know, we have to make sure that people have availability. I think the federal government is actually putting in additional funds for that as well. So clearly, access is critically important. You can't have students, I'm thinking in terms of higher ed now, you know, sitting at a McDonald's trying to look for some sort of way to do their work on their phone. You know, maybe you can do that, but that's not highly successful. We're also learning what, you know, during this time, you know, what has worked and what hasn't worked. And I do think that all of us think that people are doing the best they can, maybe under the circumstances, and people have stepped up, whether in their jobs to be productive or whether in the way that we provide education and training to make it work. But, you know, you started off by mentioning something about people can apply for jobs this way. You know, they can, and it certainly is better, in, you know, this interaction you can have where people can see you actually works. But it still is hard to distinguish yourself when you're going to look for a job from all of the others who are out there looking for jobs as well, if you don't have, if you only are doing this online, you know. And I think that we're seeing this in terms of the number of college graduates who are having difficulty finding a job. We're seeing that in certain areas of the state, it's more difficult. So I think we're all going to look back and say, what lessons did we learn about, you know, how we delivered online? Did we do it the best way? Was it available to everybody in a proportionate way? Did we drive disparity during this time? You know, one could argue that, and I would make this case that, you know, all the work that we've done to make sure that we're dealing with equity issues and closing achievement gaps didn't just stall during 2020 and 2021. It was set backwards. And all of our numbers would show that in our reports that we do through the commission, our college readiness report, our completion report, our equity report, all of that shows that we have had a sliding of the progress that we were making. We're going to come out with our readiness report in just a few weeks. It's going to show, for the first time since we've been keeping track of it, college going rates are going to fall below 60%. So we've gone from 65 to 64 to 62 to now 59. We're going to show that, you know, during this time, understandably so, because of the way education was delivered, we've seen an increase in the number of students who are graduating from high school with a waiver. That makes it more difficult for them to access higher education. So I think it really, we have to be so clear about what we have learned and what we now can do better so that we don't leave swaths of people behind at a time when, you know, the real decider of whether or not you have a good job, as you mentioned, will be, do you have the education and training to have that good job?
Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting that you're highlighting that we'll look back at this and see that things have gone backwards, because I think there's sort of an assumption out there that, oh, now we're all just jumping on technology, and we forget that not everybody has that same access and ability to do so. So that's definitely an interesting point. Fred, speaking of the internet, I know the Department of Workforce Development recently launched a job site. Is this a job site that's for individuals looking for jobs in state government, or what kind of opportunities are on there?
Oh, that's a good question. So you're referencing the Hoosier Talent Network, and essentially what it is we're using some artificial intelligence to really do a better job in job matching individuals, their competencies and their skills, to what jobs are specifically out there. So, for example, if you go to the website and you go to Hoosier Talent Network, and I'm an individual who's looking for a job, I type in my information, and the system will pull out all of the skills and competencies, even ones that you haven't listed, and it will match you to a specific job.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we will definitely be picking up more on that. I promise, Fred, we're not trying to cut you off every break. We'll definitely continue more on this Department of Workforce Development website for folks who are looking for employment. A reminder, you can join our conversation by tweeting or leaving us a Facebook message at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. We also have an app you can use that's just for this show called All in Vox Pop. Download it and you'll be able to interact with us from your phone. We'll be back after a quick break. We're talking about state officials about how Indiana might improve its efforts to help Hoosiers find jobs. I'm Miriam So. Back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam. So before the break, we were talking about a new website from the Department of Workforce Development that helps Hoosiers find job opportunities. It's part of our conversation on the state of education and the workforce. With us today are Teresa Lubbers, Indiana's Commissioner for Higher Education, Fred Payne, Indiana's Commissioner for Workforce Development, and Katie Jenner, Secretary of Education for the Indiana Department of Education. So, Fred, just to kind of pick up where we left off before the break, you were talking about this Hoosier Talent Network. Are there ways that you're planning to measure the success of this initiative?
Yes, we're looking at, obviously, the number of people who will use the site, but then just really the number of people who will actually get matched to jobs. But it's not only limited to individuals being matched for a specific job today. When the person's information is put into the Hoosier Talent Network, it can actually unlock some opportunities that the individual never thought that that they had available to them based upon what they thought their skill set was. So it can really unlock a lot of job and career opportunities based upon that person's unique potential. So one of the ways that we're looking at success is obviously, you know, how many people that will match to employers, but then also how many individuals will enroll in programs that come out of this. They may enroll in, let's say, another Workforce Ready grant program because they found through the Hoosier Talent Network that they can have a job making $60,000 when they were looking for a job that was making $40,000. But all they need is another 12-week course to get that. So there are a lot of potential opportunities that we see with this artificial intelligence tool.
Mm-hmm. And I have to say, you're mentioning AI, and when you think of state government and AI, you don't always think of state government being up with the latest technology. So that's fascinating to learn that you're using that. Have you seen any success out of it so far, or how new is this program?
It's really new. Within the first week, we had about 5,700 people to sign up for on the site. So it's really just a couple of weeks old. We just launched it here not too long ago. So really new. It's in the infancy stage. So a lot yet to come with it.
All right. Well, we'll definitely keep an eye on that. And now let's kind of move on and talk about the state budget and how that could impact education and potentially future opportunities for Hoosiers. Katie, the budget proposal at the State House right now is expected to eliminate state funding for what it calls less than moderate value courses, things like cosmetology, culinary arts, and fashion, but would increase funding for high value classes like welding and industrial automation. Is this considered a good thing? And how did that distinction come about?
So I think the value, Miriam, of career and technical education courses at the high school level are critical. And of course, that can even extend down into the K-8 space. And as we've heard Commissioner Lubbers and Commissioner Fred Payne talk about really the jobs of the present and the jobs of the future, it's critical that we in the K-12 space are aligning our teaching and learning to what is ahead. So again, that our students are prepared with the knowledge and the skills and the understanding of what might be possible after graduation. Of course, we're in to the specific legislation. Of course, we're in the midst of legislative session where amendments come on quickly. So I know that that discussion is one that is happening and we're continuing to follow, again, noting the incredible value of career and technical education for our students.
And when it comes to education, community colleges specifically, Teresa, there have been a decline in enrollment in recent years in Indiana and in other states across the country. Have you seen this have an effect with the state's Ivy Tech system?
Yes, the numbers that you cite are typical across the country, and that is that we've seen enrollment declines in higher ed, but they have been most dramatic in the community college sector across the country. You know, to the tune of like 13% decline in enrollment in the fall. Now, Ivy Tech is doing, they're changing so many things in order to address the needs of their students who actually, you know, are working, single family parents, a multitude of reasons why, you know, many of them had children in school and their schools, they were had them at home, so they weren't able to go to school in the same way. It points to the need of, you know, Ivy Online, which actually tries to reach students in online. It points to the value of the 8-week semesters that they've moved to so that students can actually enter into those more quickly. So there are a lot of things that they're doing to address that. They're getting a higher percentage of students coming back and getting one of these workforce certificates that we've talked about as well. So it's a significant issue and one that I think Ivy Tech is addressing along with community colleges around the country. We need to make sure that those students who need the opportunities provided by a community college can find that it's accessible and matches their lifestyle. So a lot of these changes were taking place before COVID. And as in the case for so many things, it's just exposed the need to actually redesign the delivery system for higher education and in a very significant way at our community college. The good news is Ivy Tech is doing it.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt, Commissioner Lovers. I was so excited to add this in. I think the other real opportunity that we have in Indiana and that we're seeing is our community colleges, Vincennes and Ivy Tech, partnering with our K-12 schools. As I look across the state, from Elkhart County, who's working on, you know, post-secondary credentials plus work-based learning to equal kind of like a youth apprenticeship option to completions at Garrett Kaiser Butler. I mean, I could go around the entire state of Indiana and highlight how the community college space is really seeping into K-12 and then allowing more access earlier for Hoosiers to be connected into that training and attainment process.
And with the pandemic and how a lot of things have resorted to online, for example, taking classes online, have you seen that as a potential to create more affordable opportunities for college level courses where if you're going to take it online, maybe it's cheaper than actually going to campus?
There's been some focus on that. There were some students who were frustrated, I think, that they were going to have to pay the same tuition and the delivery system was going to be online. So I think they're actually working their way through that. As you might imagine, reinventing a higher education institution in a month to change the dynamics of the financing model is challenging. It does point out, though, the other options that are there. For example, Purdue purchasing Kaplan and actually reinventing Purdue Global, which is really for older students who come back and primarily for those students who have some college and no degree, they didn't finish. We have 550,000 of those in Indiana, or a place like WGU Indiana, which is based on a competency model and an exclusively online model. I think you'll see that each of the higher education institutions is engaging in a much more a focused way on the delivery of online as well in response to this and just the changing nature of what people's expectations are going forward.
Now, when it comes to unemployment, I just want to touch on this real quick with Fred. We've heard from a lot of people since the beginning of the pandemic that they've had issues with unemployment and the process is really slow. Communications with the state can be very frustrating. Should people expect to see a lag in their benefits
Well, we still maintain 85% of those who file end up receiving their payments within our 21-day time frame on average. There are those claims that go well beyond that for a variety of reasons. One of the issues that's causing quite a bit of delay now, particularly on the federal unemployment benefit side, really is the increase in fraud activity. And we've had to put some new measures in place that would verify a little bit deeper, and individuals based upon actually the new legislation that was passed in late December and then extended here last week, a couple weeks ago, it requires some different type of information that the person must provide us. So we anticipate that that's not going to speed up the process. But what it does do is it helps us to guarantee that the individuals who are supposed to receive the payments, that they will actually receive it and not a fraudster.
Okay. And it's interesting you should mention the fraud. I was going to ask you about that because last week I got an email. It turned out to be a phishing email saying, we're going to increase your unemployment benefits. And I was like, I never applied for this. What is happening? So, yeah, that's definitely a real issue. I think, you know, we should definitely highlight. Katie, yeah. I want to get back to, go ahead.
No. I was just saying, yes, that is an issue that we need to highlight because that is, you know, it is a real serious issue around the country now. Indiana is not left out of that. And that phishing email, I do want to take an opportunity to let the listeners know that they should really be on the lookout for phishing expeditions when it comes to fraud. But also we're seeing the fraudsters to try to clone websites and to try to clone our websites. It's going on with a number of our sister states around the country. So be very careful about who you send your information to and do not send information on social media. We will not reach out to you on social media trying to get you to apply for unemployment insurance.
Yes, thank you. That's definitely a great reminder. Earlier, we were talking about Indiana College Corps. You briefly touched upon it, Katie. Can you tell us a little bit more, let our listeners kind of understand what exactly that is?
Sure. And thank you, Miriam, for circling back on that. So the Indiana College Corps is a 30-credit hour block of general education college-level coursework that can be taken in high school. So I mentioned, I think, several times, dual credit and advanced placement courses. And there's specific sequence of options that a student can take to make up that 30-credit package. But essentially, that equates to about 10 courses. And right now in Indiana, we have 64% of our high school credit, or our high school graduates leaving with dual credit or AP. So if we have 64% of them leaving with that, and we know that many of these students are leaving with multiple different credits and classes, then, you know, essentially the question here that some high schools in Indiana are starting to figure out is if we can package this, these 10 certain courses, then a student can leave with that first year of college done, and legislation requires that it transfers, no questions asked, to any public college or university in the state of Indiana, which is not only an incredible springboard for students, but going back, I think, Miriam, you mentioned the college debt or Commissioner Leverage, the college debt, the college savings that can have for a student and a family is really, really critical and such an opportunity. And then I'll also add, we're also seeing, I mentioned that it's required to transfer to any public Indiana college or university. We're also seeing some of our private colleges in Indiana hopping on this opportunity. So, for example, I saw recently that Hanover College is now accepting the Indiana College Corps. So this is something that not all of our high schools across the state even know about, this opportunity. Again, I mentioned that 1 in 5 high schools we're seeing have students who graduate with the Indiana College Corps. But this is really, really something over the next couple of months several months, I should say, that the Department of Education will be working hand in hand with the Commission for Higher Education to get the word out and the information out so that we're really providing intentional opportunities for our Indiana students.
Because we know
this,
that
this program is, oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, we know that the students who complete the Indiana College Core are much more likely to be successful. About 94% of the students who complete the College Core go on to college. And if you calculate what that would cost for the first year of college compared to getting those credits when you're in high school, you could get the first year of college for less than $750. So, I mean, there are reasons to make sure people know that. Katie mentioned the 1 in 5 schools that are offering Indiana College Core. In some cases, it's only 1 or 2 students there. So, I mean, we have a lot of work to do to brand this in a way that schools know about it and that parents and students are taking advantage of the opportunity.
So is this available in all high schools for students to take advantage of, or is it just select places that it's being tested out in right now?
So it could be, Miriam. It's available to any high school, regardless of school type, right? Traditional, public, charter, non-public, any high school can offer this right now. And that's our real opportunity ahead, that we want to get the word out and not only teach and share this information with our high school principals, but also those high school counselors who are so critical to our schools and advising students and helping students to really think through their life path and trajectory ahead.
Mm-hmm. When you think about this, now, in 2013, we had only 11 students in Indiana who were graduating with the Indiana College Core, then called the SDGEC. Our most recent numbers for 2019, because we don't have the 2020 numbers yet, are closer to 1,700. So you are seeing an escalation. But most of that is happening with more students in the same schools doing it as opposed to an expansion of the number of schools. So we need to make sure that that opportunity is available to all and not to some.
Mm-hmm. And when you say make sure, like what would you say are like the concrete steps you would have to do to make sure that other schools are taking advantage of this?
Well, it's pretty labor intensive. I mean, I'm counting on Katie. No, I mean, it actually means that we have to take advantage of every opportunity we have to talk to schools about how they can do this. They probably are close to being able to do it, and sometimes they just need to bundle those courses in a different way to understand it. So it really is requiring us to meet with counselors and principals and superintendents, and then actually, on the other side, build the brand knowledge with families and students so they're asking for it as well.
Yeah, I would add, we have exceptional educators across the state. And so I think part of our opportunity ahead is just making sure the information is known, right? For several years, Miriam, it's really the increase that Commissioner Lubbers described has really been an effort. It has been a word of mouth. Like, hey, did you hear you can do this? Hey, did you hear about this opportunity for students? And moving forward, if we share the information with our educators, I absolutely believe they'll do everything possible to support students and complete the pathway.
Awesome. Well, thank you all so much for joining us today. We were talking about the state of education and the workforce here in Indiana. Thank you to all of our guests for joining us. Teresa Lubbers, Indiana's Commissioner for Higher Education, Fred Payne, Indiana's Commissioner for Workforce Development, and Katie Jenner, Secretary of Education for the Indiana Department of Education. Our producers, Drew Dodlin, Micah Yason, Tim Brock, Scott Cameron is our managing editor, Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme song. Tomorrow, we'll talk about the law enforcement reform bill headed to the governor's desk. Until next time, I'm Miriam Sobe, and you've been listening to All In.